This show is not for the easily offended. So if you are easily offended, go listen to something else.
Are you kidding me? Delinquents is the bomb.
I was just like, I can't believe I'm reading this. I'm like, no wonder Van
Lanty. You don't appreciate a good ass map.
He gave the plot, and I'm like, yeah, I can tell Van Lanty's not writing this. I'm like, whew! Oh man, I can't believe that book.
And with that, welcome to Indie Comic Book Noise, episode 356. I'm Steve Raker, along with Whirlwindex Kevin and Watcher from Ottawa, Phil.
Flustered Phil, because now I have to figure out what I'm covering.
Flustered with a PH. And Andrew the LA Rabbit. It's the whole gang here, once again, for another mishmash of indie comics goodness.
Yay.
Indie comics for me.
Now, last time you guys... actually, before we get into the books, I have exciting con news. I'm getting my plans together and definitely going to be going to the special edition New York City Comic Con thing. That's June 6th and 7th.
Well, I'll be going to the Long Beach Expo at the end of February. It's a 2-day show. They've really expanded it this year. I mean, I think they've gone like 3 times the space it was last year. They're flying in a lot of guests. I think I mentioned last time we reviewed the Only Living Boy, they're flying out the creative team for that. So I'm pretty excited, and it'll probably be too late by the time this airs, but Sunday, February 8th, I'm going to the Pasadena Comic and Toy Show, which I think is the first one they've had. They've got Sergio as a special guest.
Nice.
It's always good fun. So that's a one-day Sunday con. I think it's like $5 or $10 for early admission. One of those kind of fun shows, you know, where you're not... I mean, I like the big shows, too, but it's also fun to just go to one that's a couple of bucks and you walk around, and it's still got talented people, but it's not quite the same as, you know, having a big full-on comic press. And obviously, I'm lucky enough, again, to have scored regular civilian tickets to the San Diego Comic-Con adventure, which is held at the end of July. No, middle of July. But I have a feeling if you don't have your tickets now, unless you're getting the pro or exhibitor, the window I believe is closed, but I'm not sure about that. Those are my appearances coming up.
Woo! How about you guys north of the border? Anything coming up there?
No, I'm too lazy.
Possibly. I haven't ironed out my plans for the Toronto Comic Con or Toronto Comic Arts Festival yet. So
I have a
we'll see.
Maple Syrup Convention. That's about it.
I have an igloo convention. Mountie convention.
You know, last time Kevin sort of helped us solidify our definition of the indie comic web that we or umbrella that we encompass here on Indie Comic Book Noise by talking a little Vertigo. It was Kevin, right?
No, it was me.
It was Phil? All right, well, since it's a negative thing, I'll say that it was Kevin. No, I'm just kidding.
It was Kevin.
But I caught up on a book that I still consider an indie book, even though it's really published by one of the big two, and that's from the Icon line that Marvel has. But it was an indie book long before it was an Icon book, and that is Powers. And when Powers started coming out from Icon, it started coming out really, like, inconsistently. And mm-hmm. I just kind of – I kept buying it, but I just stopped reading it because
– You forgot the story as you read it.
Exactly. That's a book that doesn't give you a lot of catch-up as to what's going on, recap stuff, and it just kind of launches into the next part of the story. So I like to read it in chunks. And here it served me again well because I was able to read issues 7 through 11 of the first Icon series, the final arc that ended in 2012. And then I read all 12 issues of the Powers Bureau series, which ended a couple of months ago or several months ago, and then this new series just started back up. But it was pretty cool because I got right back into it with a very good storyline, and then was able to tolerate a couple of mishmashy ones. But in issues 7 through 11 of the Icon series, it's, you know, it's Bendis and Oeming. We've got, you know, the Detective Walker. He's got a new partner who's kind of investigating him for internal services, and he's got like this case of a godlike hero group called the Golden Ones that are being serially murdered, and they bring in a federal investigator who happens to be Deanna Pilgrim, his old partner, and so there's a whole bunch of back and forth character tension that you would expect from Powers, and it's kind of just the way you'd want it to be. And the story ends with the whole city being completely flooded by like skyscraper high tidal waves from this vengeful god matriarch lady. And the series ends with that, with Walker missing and the Power Squad all being promoted to federal agents to launch the next series, that Powers FBI thing, the Bureau. And that, the 12 issues, it wasn't particularly A-list cases. There was like a thing of like a ring of power sperm being brokered, for instance. It was more about setting up their new status quo and the relationships between Walker and Pilgrim and like some of the feds and the FBI agents and that structure. And then once the status quo was set up, they totally like tear it all down in the last few issues and end things. So it was actually pretty entertaining to get back into those characters and kind of get reacquainted with them, which was easy to do in chunks. And really, that's how I would recommend reading Powers when you do.
Yeah, you have to, I think.
But each issue boasts how like, oh, we're going to be regular, you know, coming out on a regular schedule now. And then it's like,
I was going to say that because I heard an interview with Bendis when the first volume was coming out.
Yeah.
Icon, and he said they were ahead, and no matter what, it was coming out every month, no matter what, and it did not after issue one.
Yeah, and then they upped the page count and said, this time we're really going to do it. And I'm like, you couldn't do it at a regular page count. I don't have any confidence now, and it was just, like, embarrassing.
But Powers is a good book, but like Steve says, it's got to be read in chunks, though.
Oh, the chunking kind of made me miss one of the subtleties of the series once, but yeah, it's better in chunks.
And once you get the idea of who the characters are, then if there's a cool story, they're a lens to look at a cool story through. You know what I mean?
But if Walker's the story is a fucking Green Lantern,
yeah. that all gets resolved actually in the Powers Bureau series. But that's what was different about that Bureau series was that it shifted rather than it being kind of knowing what their structure is to experience the Powers world through. Instead of that being a given and having the story be the interesting thing, like the case all of a sudden is secondary and what's going on with them character-wise becomes the focus, which is in some ways just as interesting, but it's very different from what the series has been for all the, 40-something issues it was before that.
Yeah, Burrow is the only one I haven't read yet. Are you guys going to be watching the TV show when it becomes available for you eventually?
I don't know. I've got nothing against it, but I don't know if I'll watch it.
Well, the problem is it's only on PlayStation at first.
Yeah, PlayStation 4, isn't it?
Well, no, I heard that the first episode is going to be more widely available. Then after that, you're supposed to be able to buy them like
iTunes eventually, yeah.
Yeah, well, just from the promo things, like, I wouldn't buy it at this point, but who knows how it's going to turn out.
If you follow the comic, like, I think the comic could make a good TV show, like.
Yeah, no reason why not.
And it'd be an easy enough one to do, I think. Like, the costumes would be the most expensive part for them, because they don't have to use powers too often, really.
You could do it Barney Miller style, you know, where a lot of stuff, you know, everything's getting brought into the station, but a lot of stuff is happening off scene, you know what I mean? And the perpetrator's being brought in, shouting about what just happened or whatever, you know?
But yeah, going on something like just the PlayStation at first, though, like, those are bad moves.
Yeah, it's weird.
Well, they're
Netflix
trying to.
Netflix is where you want to be if you do something like that.
Well, there's a lot of different services if
that's
you're
the problem,
successful.
Right. Once it's made, it's out there, though, you know?
Yeah, that's just it. Yeah.
And Kevin, I was thinking of you because I read another Icon book. I read the and seeing that a new Casanova was coming out from Image, right?
Yeah.
That I read the last series, which I couldn't remember if I had read or not, so I reread it, and I don't think I had read it, and that was the Casanova Avarita from Fraction and Ba. That was from 2011 and went into 2012, four issues there. And that was the one where he discovers his nemesis's, like, personage prior to becoming, Zeno or whatever the guy's name is?
Yeah, you mean, the Invisible Man.
Yeah, yeah. So he finds who he was, like, in a timeline before he became the big bad guy. So instead of having to, like, wipe out, like, timelines trying to get to him, he can just go around and, like, assassinate all the iterations of him, you know? So he travels around the multiverse killing all the iterations of this guy. But in doing so, he kind of, like, starts kind of liking the guy.
Yeah.
And after doing it countless times, he ends up conspiring with one guy and hides that he's keeping him alive. And then they flash, like, forward to the Invisible Man wrapped guy, and he's like, yep, that's just how I remember it happening. So he inadvertently creates his nemesis. Oh, it was just, you know, crazy Casanova stuff. But at the end, a whole new status quo was set up where he leaves the whole empire that he's an agent of, and that's actually where this new series picks up, with him kind of being mind-wiped and in a new environment on his own. So I'm really interested. I think that Avarita was my favorite of the series so far.
Wow.
That's the third series, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I don't know. I can't keep track of them since it was like, has it been like 4 years since the...
Yeah, it was like Gula before then, and...
Yeah. Yeah, was it Luxuria or something?
Yeah, there was one of those too.
Yeah, I just remember that... Like the previous one being really fractured and messed up and like world hopping, and I'm like, all the multiverses are being destroyed. and then I'm like, in a way. Good stuff. Man, I love that series. And now I apparently need a third or a fourth version, because they have them in the swanky hardcovers now.
So Casanova is about like, it's like Sliders?
No, not really. It's more spy. It's the most Matt Fraction book you can find, I think. It's like ninjas and spies and it's sci-fi.
Like a,
and
yeah, it's like a Man from Uncle like organization, but they travel through the multiverse to be able to do their missions, and they're all ninja-like and using time and the multiverse to their advantage. But their nemesis also kind of bends time and space, and they've kind of been going after him. Kind of like treating Dandruff with decapitation. So they've been trying to, you know, he keeps coming to a head, and he learns things about his family and his sister and this. And the hero himself isn't always, I should say the protagonist, because he's not always heroic. And he's a weird dude, and sometimes it just seems like he's trying to get out of it all, and other times, you know, he's not always with the program, I should say, and not always interested in what the real mission parameters are. But because it's so crazy in the multiverse stuff that they do, it can be presented very bizarrely, especially with, Gabriel Ba's artwork. It can be distorted anyway.
Yeah, it's hard for me to detach myself from discovering it and pre-ordering the first run when... Like, it was solo stories, sort of. Like, it's hard to... Because it was so new and fresh, and you're like... You're looking for that great Image breakout series and everything, and it's hard to, like, detach yourself and say, oh, is that objectively, like, the best series or the worst series or whatever? It's like... It's just... It was an experience following that for the month-to-month and everything.
Andrew... Regale us with a pamphlet that you picked out of the back pocket of a street artist on the streets of Los Angeles or something.
Well, I don't have that, but I do have a review copy of something from a smaller label, if that's okay.
What's that?
At least I think they're a smaller label. They're not one I'm super familiar with, but it's a comic that's going to come out in April, So it's a review, and the company is Pop Goes the Icon. Have you guys heard of that?
No,
I haven't.
They're partnered with Creation Forge Studios, and they're just a little, you know, they're one of them smaller outfits, I would guess. I don't know, maybe they sell 10 billion copies in Russia or something, but I never heard of them. But you know me, I'm always willing to try something new. And the creative team here is Russell Lissau, and the press release gives his writing credits as Strawberry Shortcake and Batman Strikes. Which, I would love that team up, by the way. If they could have Strawberry Shortcake fight Batman,
I wish they put the credits in the opposite order, and then it would sort of sound like that was happening. Like, it might have been one book.
I'm sure that's why we got that. And drawn by John Bivens, his credits are Pop Gun and Dark Engine, which I am not super familiar with. But he did contribute to the Reading with Pictures textbook, which was a Kickstarter, and I do have that book. The Reading with Pictures was a, I don't know if you guys followed that at all, but it was a textbook. And the idea was a comic book textbook, but about regular subjects. Mm-hmm. So it was like sample, like, okay, here's a 5-page about math told with comics, and here's a 6 pages about history. Sort of reminiscent of those cartoon guides that came out years ago. I don't know if you guys ever read any of those. Hello?
No.
Okay. Those are fun, too, and those are like the cartoon guide to physics and things like that. They're just using comics in a way to educate as opposed to just entertain. And who doesn't like to look at funny pictures? But anyways, this is Old Wounds, 1 of 4, and the front cover is pretty creepy. The top is a woman in blue, and then the bottom, I don't know if it's the same one, but it looks like a open jaw, but the skin has been removed, and it's all tinted in red.
So this is a lot different than Strawberry Shortcake.
Yes, and then Old Wounds is in the middle, kind of the border between the two, the title of it. And I thought that was a pretty striking-looking cover. And the story is, the letters, Josh Southall, editor P.J. Perez. You'll notice I didn't mention a colorist, and that's because this is black and white. So if that's a bothersome to some people, you'll want to avoid this book. But it's really fine, fine work on the black and white. Kind of that with a lot of details, a lot of lines in it, which I always find kind of catching the eye, but kind of scratchy at the same time. And basically, what I've enjoyed about it, it's nothing particularly fresh, but I thought they did a real good tale of it. And basically, it opens with a man being informed that his ex-wife was killed in an explosion. And they use these flashbacks to show that him and his wife and all these people had a secret life as superheroes. But he's retired now. He has a cane, and he's clearly older. And so what I like about it is they chose to not put a ton of words in it, which I think is a mistake a lot of these smaller comics have. So there's, I mean, Kevin wouldn't like it because it would probably fail the stopwatch test. But a lot of the flashback sequences aren't cluttered with a lot of text or whatever. And I kind of like it gave a bit of a change because then the ex-husband goes and talks to like another partner of theirs to find out some details. But when they flash back, they're almost always silent. And the police question him, obviously, because he was an ex-husband. And then they're like, well, is there anyone that would want to kill your wife? And he's like, ex-wife? He's like, no. And you could tell, you know, he's still in love with her. And then what happens is he meets for lunch, and the diner gets blown up. So clearly they're after that, and it ends with a nice kind of, you know, oh my God, what the hell's going on? You know, Lori, what'd you get me into type. But obviously, as I noted, I mean, how many of these things have we seen with, like, ex-superheroes into retirement, and then their past catches up with them? So, but I just think they did a good job of having it be told in that kind of sparse way. Particularly crime books, I found, can be a little wordy.
Usually.
And that, I mean, that's one of the challenges, I think, when doing crime in comics is, it's not like noir or something where you have pages of snappy dialogue. I don't think comic books work great with tons of dialogue, because it just kind of tends to clutter up the page. But how do you get the crime? You know, there's usually a lot of details and everything. I think the art is, like I said, stylized but professional. I had no problem with the storytelling. Everything was very clear. The characters were always very clear. I mean, obviously, there's a certain subjective portion to whether you enjoy it or not. But from a functional standpoint, I can't find anything to fault it as far as, you know, sometimes when you're reading indie books, there can, or even big two books, you find a few sequences where you're like, wait, what happened there? You know, but I found none of that here. I don't know. I just was like, you know, sometimes I try these books coming out and I'm pleasantly surprised with it. But I'd not heard of this imprint.
Would you pick up more if you saw them?
They're $2.99. What I would probably do is see if it ends up getting collected. I've become, only because I'm unfamiliar with the company, mm-hmm. and not to knock indie companies, but let's be honest. I mean, we all know a few that have had trouble keeping schedules or even finish, you know, that type of thing. Yeah. And I have no doubt. I mean, I hate to be that guy. But, I mean, we've all had books, and even from Image or other companies, and they just stop.
Yeah, I got burned by Image last week.
I'll tell you later.
Well, I was just going to say, because Danger Club, that came out 2 years ago, and they collected it with four issues. Issue six came out 2 weeks ago, but the collection doesn't have issue five, so I'm kind of fucked.
Digital.
Because it was 2 years ago when that issue came out.
Yeah. Don't tell me. They had a sale.
No.
They had a digital sale. You could have got it for 99 cents.
No, I like the comic a lot. I want it. So now I got to wait for the trade because that comic was pretty much canceled for a while.
Yeah, I believe I was at a show and one of the creative people had a, I don't remember, like a death in the family or a car accident. One of those hideous stories where you're like, oh my gosh, that's terrible. But you're right. It's that type of, but I was thinking more a few years ago, man, it was seemed like it was really rife with like titles just not finishing. And I know that
Image is under control now, I believe though.
It seems like they've really come back. But like I said, go back a few years. We can find more than a few titles that just stop. And that's the truth of it. But
it's interesting now with them having their being more consistent. Like you said, Image has their act together more now. But they've also just released in this last year and even upcoming a slew of number ones. So who knows what's, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Well,
if they can keep that up.
I've been keeping up on a lot of their number ones, and they've been coming out monthly better than Marvel and DC a lot of the time. For me, like Nailbiter, like the Boom ones I'm collecting,
I think the publishers know that. They know that it's really key. I mean, look, things happen, and you got to get your priorities straight, but I do think they know it's really fatal to a book.
Yeah, I mean,
Well, I think it's our new generation of writers we're getting and stuff now, too. I think.
I don't know.
Like Joshua Williamson and stuff, you know? I just think they're really good at doing the monthly grind.
It depends if you're making the money, too.
Well, he does a lot of books, so I'm sure he does.
Yeah.
All right.
But, yeah, if you have, like, a year between issues, you have to remind everyone again, hey, I'm still here. So if you have something coming out every month, you know, people remember who you are better.
Also, it just keeps up. It rewards you to not wait for the trade, which I'm doing that more and more, even of the big two stuff. So, you know, you want to get me out of that because if I'm waiting for the trade, your current business model isn't going to work.
I wish I could.
Floppy sales, and you probably do under the current model. You need to put to get me off the trade back into floppies more.
I wish I could wait for the trades for the Image ones, but I can't because they make really nice trades too now.
What are you reading up there, Phil?
Well, I did read Spawn 250. Any Spawn fans here?
Nope.
No?
Not a big fan, but I always appreciate the art and flip through it for those reasons. I flip through that to check out the pinups and the artwork and stuff.
Andrew, turn your mic on.
I don't read Spawn. It was when I was getting out of comics.
Oh, yeah, that's when you were out. So.
Yeah, so and I mean, it had just launched when I was there. For some reason, I didn't have the reaction to Image that I probably should have. It was all that excitement, but it just didn't. I think I was so close to getting out that it just, I couldn't muster the enthusiasm to be like, oh yeah, a bunch of new comics that are coming out. Talk about books that come out once every 6 months.
Yeah, I wasn't interested in the Image books when they first came out either.
Steve, your man Greg, he worked on them.
Well, I have all those now. I have all the hardcovers of the Capullo stuff.
Signed out.
And I've got a beautiful poster, giant poster of Spawn fighting, what's his bad guy there? Like that Mel Blage guy.
Yeah.
Got that signed by Greg to us. That's pretty cool.
Well, that's the thing about Spawn. It's always had quality art. Like, even if you didn't like the book, I find the art's always been spot on. Like, especially with him on the books for so long.
Yeah, I tried to be cool, so I wanted to skip all the Image books. And I remember... It was funny. Someone saying, "Is that Spider-Man 2099?" And then the comic shop owner saying, "No, that's Spawn."
So, well, I was more like Kevin, I think, in the old days too, with the stopwatch type of thing.
Yeah.
And
Kevin will grow out of that.
But you know, some of those old books, I seem to remember, you could rip through them. If the art didn't catch you, you were really in trouble because it was a quick read.
That changed in Spawn for sure later on. After a while, it got too much of a read.
It's a fine line between what is going on? This is a chore. And wow, that took 5 minutes.
One of my friends growing up, he collected Spawn, and so he had like the first 100. So that's how I read most of them. So after those, plus I've picked up books for cheap. So I've out of the 250 issues, I've probably only missed maybe like 60 issues or something.
Wow.
But I'm not saying I love the book, but there's definitely single story issues or maybe some small runs that I did think were really good. Like there was one time where he went to help an abusive family, like the two little kids. I don't know if you guys ever read that issue.
No. I remember when someone tried to sell me on Spawn, "We'll give you a free issue of Spawn." Mm-hmm. You know, they're doing these cool Twilight Zone like stories, and it didn't take.
Yeah, I just found like in the Spawn run there is some cool stuff, but there's a lot of boring stuff at the same time too. But the art's always quality.
Maybe I'll put in a request at the library, Phil. They got that stuff traded, right?
Yeah, but you got to be careful because I wouldn't even know where to tell you to pick up. Like maybe
most stuff random trades.
Yeah,
Capullo.
You could start with that, but I would say almost, I guess, start at, if you can, get the first book, maybe, and then the Capullo stuff.
That's just those are the hardcovers I have. I have, like, volume one, and then, like, volume 5, 6, 7.
Yeah. Me, I liked it around, like, late 20s to, like, 60s or something, probably the best. Something like that. But, yeah, anyway, so 250.
Are those the Angela issues in there?
No, it's more when he was kind of traveling around on his own single stories. Like one issue he went and kind of took care of the Ku Klux Klan, like stuff like that. Like it was pretty cool.
Angela.
But yeah, so 250. It very big double size issue, hoping that it would wash the taste of Savage Dragon out of my mouth.
What?
Because of the bad 200 issue.
It wasn't that bad.
It was bad enough.
I don't think if you know the story behind 250, I don't think that's going to wash it out of the mouth knowing...
Well, that's the thing. I'm kind of jumping in out of nowhere because the last time I read it was 185, Al Simmons committed suicide because he found like a dead spot in the alleyway where like God and hell had no control over. And so this new Spawn has been in the comics since then. And this is the issue that wraps all that up. So basically what it is the Spawn costume is out of control and is just pure evil trying to kill this new Spawn guy who is, I want to say an angel, but I have no clue. He has wings, though. So it's them kind of resolving that. And for the most part, it's the story of Sam and Twitch trying to solve this mystery that basically whatever they do has no, it doesn't matter because these are like gods, you know, fighting pretty much. but it's great art. It after this issue, Al Simmons returns. That's kind of why I picked it up, just so I can kind of check that out. And it gets the new team of Paul Jenkins on it and John Boy. I don't know who that is, the artist. So I'm curious to see what they do with Al Simmons again, but he's looking pretty evil. And after that whole, remember the whole Image crossover? They never really did anything with that. There's a comic that never finished.
Was that Aunt or something?
Shattering Image, I think it was called, Image but Haunt. United. Haunt they finished. But yeah, Image 30th, United.
40th anniversary? That's
10-year anniversary.
Because I think I got a zero issue and then two issues after that, and that was it.
Something like that.
But yeah, Spawn was the big bad guy of that. So, I don't know. Overall, though, I think it's quality. Spawn's quality. I think the art's always quality. The writing's good. It's just it might not be your type of story, that's all. But if people want to give Spawn another chance, really next month will be the good jumping on point, I guess.
Definitely. Kevin.
Speaking of a story not being my type of story. No, I'm just kidding. I was just trying to wind Phil up. So I read that thing that he had also read. And he says, you're going to like this. No, Kevin, I know you're going to like this. You're going to read this. You're going to sit yourself down. And it's going to be awesome.
I was right.
So, yeah, that was the Wicked and the Divine. I think people like this more than I did. Like, I enjoyed myself. Like, the McKelvey artwork is awesome. But it was all right. I don't know. Like, it was good stuff. But I didn't think it was... I didn't overly enjoy myself. Like, oh, yeah, this is so good.
For me, it's the dialogue. Like, when Lucifer's talking to the girl there. Like, it's just all the dialogue that goes on with it. Like, you read the whole first arc?
Yeah, it's just weird because I'm like, I can't find anything, like, wrong with it, really. Like,
you're reading the words?
It's just, I don't know, maybe, like, it's an interesting concept and everything, and I like their little icons when they have the black pages and they sort of start everything off, and they even go back to, like, previous generations of, like, of what they're setting up with all the different... different guys there, but I don't know. It's just something about it.
I think that Lucifer character for me was the best character I read of 2014.
I don't think I was as invested or interested in the story as I should have been.
It's fine. The writing's very high quality. Like,
you boys haven't given us any of the basics, by the way, just so you know.
Yeah. Well, basically, every 200 years, all the gods again are reborn in teenagers. And basically, they're like pop stars for 5 years, I think, and then they die. And then another 100 years or whenever it is, that happens again with new teenagers. So this is about the current ones right now.
It's just weird. Like that's not a bad idea. It's just... something about it. I don't know. Some of the early stuff was...
And it's by the writer that did... What was the books he did before? Phonogram?
Yeah, Phonogram.
Weren't they the Young Event? Was it Young? No.
Yes, he did,
The Marvel Now one? I don't remember the title.
He did the one the Young Avengers, whatever it was. I think so.
I'm not familiar with that book.
And Sword.
Anyway, he's good. I haven't read Phonogram or anything, but... because it's all music references and stuff. Me, it's...
I don't know.
But I like the god stuff. Like, Lucifer, I'm a big fan of. Not because I'm, like, into the Satan shit, but I just usually his character in comics is really good. And just the dialogue I find between the characters in this comic is pretty top-notch.
I've got a book. It's awesome, and you guys will all love it.
Uh-oh.
And that is Mr. Unpronounceable and the Sect of the Bleeding Eye. What might you ask is Mr. Unpronounceable and the Sect of the Bleeding Eye? It's a black and white graphic novel from the last month of 2014 from Tim Malloy, is the writer and the artist. And he goes under the publishing banner of Milk Shadow Books, milkshadowbooks.com. And I found this on Comixology. It's the second volume. There is a print copy of the first volume. I assume that there will be a print volume version of this as well. The first volume is a lot of one-page strips. I don't know if it was a webcomic first or where this character comes from, but it was a collection of stories that seemed like they had existed previously. And this, the second edition here, this Sect of the Bleeding Eye, has several stories within it that are loosely connected by, like, kind of interesting segues. And, guys, this is, it's crazy fever dream trips through these, like, well-crafted environments. It's laden with quasi-philosophical, bordering on mumbo-jumbo dialogue that makes for this really interesting experience, because you don't know if it's, like, really deep or being really campy. Mr. Unpronounceable is, like, a suit and glasses-wearing dude with these maniacal facial expressions. He's a necromancer. He calls himself an inquisitor. And the first scene, I'll just spoil a little bit of what the first scene is, of many. He's wandering through the desert, and he comes across a mummified corpse with his eyes and mouth sewn shut. Can't speak, just has these, like, non-expressions as he looks over at Mr. Unpronounceable. But Mr. Unpronounceable can understand everything he says. It's crazy. And this guy, this corpse guy, is stuck on the side of the road with this unresponsive vehicle. So Mr. Unpronounceable flips up the hood, and inside, instead of an engine, it's all these, like, larval, swarthing, worm-like entities. And he reaches in with both hands, and he's, like, squishing things, and blood's coming out. And he's looking over at the guy, and he's saying, "Trust me, I know exactly what I'm doing here." And he keeps reaching around deeper, and he pulls out this shriveled-up humanoid homunculus. And he's like, "Ah, a potent specimen oozing with dark sorcery." And then the silent, expressionless corpse thing gives Mr. Unpronounceable a ride into the city. Once they get to this big city, he tells him to drive for 3 days straight and then make a left. And when he does, his destination is this basilical of the holy silent monks that turn out to be not very silent. And it goes from there. It's one scene after another. Grotesque matter, flying carpets, hallucinogenic trips, towers reaching to the clouds with, like, eyeballs as handholds, and murder and zombies and so much more, guys. It's I haven't read a comic book like this in a really long time, and really enjoyed it, and quickly bought the other volume, and am looking forward to getting into it. It's Tim Malloy, all O's in Malloy, from Milk Shadow Books. Mr. Unpronounceable and the Sect of the Bleeding Eye. The line work is really cool, too. You guys will dig it.
Maybe some not related plot-wise, but sounds kind of like The Auteur almost.
As far as its craziness and its bending of reality, yeah, but this is more cryptic in a way. which I'll share some of it with you guys, and you can get a sense of what the scoop is. But this is really interesting. I think they run for about like $6 or $7 or something like that, digitally at least. But cool stuff. Mr. Unpronounceable.
As you know, we talk a fair amount about Valiant Comics.
No, we don't.
So there's a new Divinity, number one. And this is Matt Kent, Trevor Harrison, Ryan Wynn, David Barron are your creative teams involved. And I'm not sure if this is a reboot character or not.
I've never heard of that one myself. No,
no. It seems like it's the stand-in for Soul or Man of the Atom.
Okay.
But we have a very nice, you know, the fancy kind of painted covers that people like so much that remind me of. And it tells the story of this Russian orphan who's raised to be a super astronaut. And he, you know, he's like the best and the brightest and passed all these tests. And this is back in the Cold War days. So they have this plan to put him in this sort of half suspended animation to send him to the edge of the galaxy, but it'll take him 30 years. So it's good that he's an orphan and can leave all that behind. And then it sort of smash cuts with a guy today, David Camp, who's rock climbing and has an accident. And then it turns out that these two guys are kind of linked in a way. Because you see the guy blast off into space, Abram. And then at the end, he ends up reaching out to the rock climbing guy, who sort of, once he falls, like he has this red thing. And so they end up meeting in this weird space. And there's a metaphor for reading a book going through it. And so it's kind of got that Kent sort of non-linear trippiness to it. And the art is very sharp. To go through, Hairsine is the penciler, Wynn is the anchor, and David Barron's the colorist. Letters Dave Lamphere, because I'm going to start trying to be better about things. But I'm reminded of Steve's comments from a long time ago about Valiant. And while I always enjoy the books, I it does sort of run back that it really just feels like Marvel, another Marvel in DC, down to a lot of the storytelling techniques.
Yeah.
And the structuring of the different limited series and the renumbering. And so I think without a real connection of the old material or a willingness to make the financial commitment that people like Phil make, you know, I just don't know. It's interesting. They don't really seem reaching out to get new people.
I regret a lot of my getting all those Valiants. There's a lot I do enjoy that I got, but yeah, I don't think the whole universe is for anyone.
So it just seems, I mean, I like it, don't get me wrong, but I've always enjoyed it and it's always quality. It just is an odd model to be like, okay, we're going to do what those guys did.
But they're not doing what
they're doing now, which is really, like, it's one thing, I guess maybe a retro thing wouldn't work. Like if they brought back Thought Balloons or maybe got out of writing for the trade or any of the, like they just are really doing a lot of what you see at the other two, which I guess makes sense because people buy Marvel and DC, but then you have...
They really are writing for the trade, too.
Archer and Armstrong is not written for the trade at all. There is so much... That is, like, the most meaty book, if not... If it's not the most meaty book, it's one of the most meaty books I read. There's a lot going on there.
I mean, there are exceptions, but you have to admit, generally, the line seems to be trading on this, and I just go back to what are they... Like, do they just not care about Steve, or are they... Like, do they have enough with their loyal base that's what they're pitching for?
I'm like Steve. I'm living proof. I say to be cool. Like, I was trying to be cool. I just use that as a thing because I didn't want to buy Valiant or Image back in the day and everything. And, you know, I was just like, oh, I'm not buying that for, you know, whatever reason. But I just say, hey, I was trying to be cool, you know, funny. But anyways, yeah, I never... Red Valiant, I never cared for Valiant. So the first time I ever bought a Valiant was when they relaunched. So they were looking for new fans, and I'm the new fan they were looking for.
There you go.
So
no, it was me because I don't know
what, like, yeah, I know I always say don't market to me because you'll go out of business because it's happened, like, lots of times. But, yeah, like, they were looking for new fans, and they found me. So at least they got one new fan. Yeah, that's not enough to sustain them, but...
Well, to be fair, I've got a lot... I didn't read any of the old Valiant, and I've read a bunch now. I just... It strikes me as, like... I don't know. I'm just very curious that they're not really trying to be, like... They're trying to beat them at their game, which seems like a weird way to go about. Because they're the only company I can think that really does that. In such a way, you know, obviously most companies would like to poach the talent because, you know, the big two books got a lot of talent, but I don't know. It just brought me back to Steve, and like I said, I can't knock any of these books as, like, they're quality books, but what's to get new people in that aren't going to be as committed? I mean, I know, Kevin, you say, but Kevin, you also read a lot of books, so I guess maybe that's what they're going for.
Not for this episode,
you
didn't.
That's true. But I don't read as many books as maybe people think I did. Like, for a long time, like, yeah, maybe I read a few more books now than I did before, but I don't know, for a long time I only read like 10 books a month or something, but I was still active, like, commenting or keeping up with the universe or stuff like that. Like, I've never read the large amount of books that everyone else reads. Of course, now it's easier with, like, a Humble Bundle and digital and everything, yeah, so I read more books now, obviously, but...
I meant currently, because I know you read Marvel, DC, Indie, like, you're not limiting yourself to one.
No, but that's because, like, when you have a subscription service where you can read anything you want for, like, Marvel, and then Humble Bundle says, here, $10, you can read 200 books, like... Like, that's a lot of books to read. So
no,
yeah.
No, it is, and I've grabbed a few Humble Bundles, but for some reason those digital, my digital Regina pile is too dangerous because it just sits there. My paper one reminds me, throws itself in my face.
Yeah.
I give Valiant a lot of credit, too. They go out of their way to make sure that you get to sample their books, whether it be digitally or in some of these sale bundles or... you know, I don't even order any of them, and I get a few every now and again in my DCBS box, and they have their, you know, their little flyer versions of things that they put out that give you a little, that aren't just sketchbooks, but are, you know, yeah, a few pages of the story, so you can get an idea of what the stuff is. And my only thing of it was right when I got back into comics in college with not a lot of disposable income, was right around when they started up, and I just wasn't looking for more comics. I was looking to check back in on as few as my interest would let me, which, you know, I'm still reading them to this day, so I went back, jumped back in with 2 feet for sure, but I just didn't jump on the bandwagon when the time was right. But yeah. That's interesting, Kevin. I didn't know that you were a recent reader.
Well, yeah. Well, not recent anymore since they've been around for
sure
for like over 2 years. But anyhow, yeah. It's just I don't know what you're supposed to do. Like if you buy all these characters that are like superhero like characters, like just be honest, superheroes. It's just like CrossGen saying we don't produce superheroes. Yeah, you might have a lot of action, adventure, sci-fi books with people have magic and everything. You might not call them superheroes, but they're basically superheroes.
Right, heroic fiction.
So, yeah, so Valiant is basically superheroes. Like, I don't know how you write, like, non-superhero characters without, and to some degree, like being influenced or look like some characters
not
that
heroes.
Already exist. Like,
they're not heroes. They're terrorists in costumes.
You could,
even if
though.
They are, that's still gonna be something that Marvel and DC has. Like every you can't really create new powers. Everyone might have their speedster or their archer or whatever. So everything is gonna look like something Marvel and DC has done to specific, you know. So I don't know how you get around that type of thing. Like,
well, what it would be to not write for the trade, to not weave the stories.
It's the events, I think, too.
I don't know.
To be nostalgic, you could bring back thought balloons. You could go for a different art style. I mean, there are a bunch of ways that don't...
They could help people in the comics?
That don't mimic what the current trends are. And it makes sense to chase the trends, because that's what people are buying. And like I said, if you did do it as a nostalgia one, it would probably not sell as well.
Well, that's what I mean. Like, that's not really a solution. And unless you feel like losing lots of money and you're a billionaire, like, why would you, like, do certain things? Like, oh.
That would be my question. Like, if a nostalgia type line where they go back to different storytelling techniques, would that necessarily fail? I don't know.
It would fail. I don't want to read that. Why do I want to... Like, that's like someone from Marvel saying, hey, I wish Marvel would, with their latest thing, I wish they would go back to the lineup from the 70s and tell stories like they used to be. Like, I have no interest in that. Like, I'm sure there's a percentage of your audience, but I want, like, the next thing or something that puts things forward. I don't want to go backwards. I want to go forwards.
See, I think I'm in the other way. I like some of the older techniques, and I think the move to make it more like storyboards and pictures is to its detriment, because one of the fun things about comics is a panel doesn't have to be a frozen second in time. It can actually represent a continuum of time within the same panel, but because we have a generation of, let's just make it like a TV show, a lot of people don't utilize that storytelling technique. And as a result, I think, well, you're dropping a weapon out of your toolkit that comics uniquely provide. and I would like to see more of those sort of things, not less, just because I feel like, I don't know, that's a cool thing that comics can do.
Yeah, but I find like indie comics are as guilty as the big companies are of doing things like that. Like, I don't think it's... Well, that's like, everyone should try harder.
Right, well, that's what Andrew's pointing out.
Yeah, but I'm always thinking back to his Valiant discussion. Like,
In my comic store, I see the Valiant comics, like, they're ordering less and less. Like, now when they get a Valiant trade in, they just get one trade and I buy it. So I think Valiant is getting not as many readers as they want, probably.
I don't know. I find everything becomes less and less. But, like, the sales... But when, like, I don't follow sales numbers, but I know, like, oh, the industry is in better shape than it's been in years. So I know that my comic shop isn't representative of what is going on, except for...
Well, they don't have the digital sales, don't... You know, that's out of the comic shop hands. Yeah, I don't. But like, I want to make it clear. It's not like I dislike the Valiant or find anything.
No, I like Valiant. I buy it every month. Yeah.
I mean, yeah, I just feel like it's they're doing a lot of what the big two are, which I find interesting.
But I don't know how you get away from that, because it's like, oh, if we don't do certain things, like, our sales are just going to drop and drop and drop and drop. Like, that's the problem of the industry. Like, everyone deals with that. So. It's not like it's exclusive to, like, only superhero universes or something. So I just...
No, but there are different things. Like,
the written portrayed thing, like, I don't really necessarily feel that, but, you know.
I think Hellboy is sort of a different vibe about how they market and produce and run their line. That's a different...
Yeah, but...
Like, there are other strategies. It's not like there's only one way. It has to be this way or you're doomed to fail. I mean, maybe, but that seems unnecessarily short-sighted.
Yeah, it's just weird because, like, everyone was like, oh, do the Hellboy model and do limited series, and now it's like BPRD, like, went to, like, monthly numbers where they're, like, at number 118 or whatever, and I'm like, oh, are they following the Walking Dead model now? It's just weird. Like, there's many different ways to do things, but I don't know. I think at some point, like, you have to do certain things. Like, you're just stuck for whatever reason.
Want to go around quick one more time and with some quick ones, if you got them?
Well, I did read Postal Number 1 by Top Cow and Image Comics. Normally, Top Cow is a little bit of a warning sign for me.
What? I thought that would be your place.
But I picked it up anyway.
I like how you... Warning sign.
If Bill gets a warning sign, you better look out.
What drew me in, though, was the beautiful cover, which was there's a stump with an axe in it, and there's a crow on it, and then the name Postal, so I thought, oh, yeah, some people are going to do some crazy shit in this. But it turned out...
We know you, Phil. A pretty cover gets you in the...
It's true. It's done by Brian Hill, who could be a buddy of yours from Los Angeles. He did the Angel comic. Remember?
Is he the writer, artist, penciler?
He's a writer. And also Matt Hawkins, who I'm not too familiar with. And then
hey, that name sounds familiar, Matt Hawkins. I think he does another Top Cow book, doesn't he?
Yes, on the back it says he does Top Cow stuff, like Think Tank, Necromancer, Vice.
That's the one. Because Rasan Ekadal, I can't say his name. He's the artist for Think Tank, I'm pretty sure, right?
I don't remember, but I remember that was one of their ones where they put out five issues, and then the audience picks one that they like, and I think Think Tank was one of them.
Pilot Season was the
Pilot
one.
Pilot Season, yeah. I think it's called. Yeah, and that one. So yeah, so this one, I was totally wrong. It's not about people going crazy and fucking shit up. It's actually about a guy who works at a post office and he has Asperger's. And
that doesn't exist anymore, does it?
No.
And basically, it's kind of like a Veronica Mars tale. So I kind of enjoyed it because it's him, this kid with Asperger's, trying to solve this mystery, which is this fucked up town he lives in where they're almost like a cult, because if someone does something wrong that they don't agree with, they execute them. So he's in this weird town, and you get to see like him kind of solve this crime in his own way. I was very surprised, so I
I think it's worth a look for sure. I'm going to end up picking up the next issue for sure.
Cool. I took a chance on another new Image series as well. There's been two issues out so far called Graveyard Shift. Have either guys read this one?
No, I must have missed that one.
It is written by Jay Faber with art by...
Oh, I did miss it. Damn it.
Art by Fran Bueno.
Missed it too. Because there were ads and I got caught up on Copper.
Yeah.
And all that.
Oh, nice.
And Bueno does both the line art, black and white art, and the color, which is great because the color really enhances the black and whites with the faces and the warmth of the flesh tones and stuff. And there are Jay Lee covers too, which makes the package really look
nice. I like
Jay
Lee.
Yeah. And this is a love story. Real pretty girl. It's like a guy and a girl, a couple, and the girl's real pretty, blonde type, and they're poking their nose where they really shouldn't be so much, and they're kind of hunting vampire, investigating them in some way, and she gets bit by a vampire, and it's like lost to him, which is like crazy. And then at the end of the first issue, she returns. So that's a little creepy. And in the second issue, it's pretty obvious based on the covers that this is a vampire story. So her coming back, you can put two and two together. And she comes back to him and tries to attack him and stuff, but then he's able to kind of get her kind of former consciousness to emerge and able to talk to her and whatnot. And she's still in love with him and doesn't want to hurt him and all that sort of business. And they're being chased by a very real and present danger.
And I'm getting a Twilight vibe.
She is, she's a cutie though. She's like, even as a vampire, she is in like a secretary suit skirt with like a blouse and everything. And like, I would be so out of there if I was this guy, but fortunately she's like drawn like that. She makes you really like her. And I, you can kind of see, all right, she's a real score, this one. So this guy's sticking around and you kind of don't know what's going to happen there on the run from this horde. And I don't know where it's going to go, but right now the flow is easy enough to follow. The characters are few enough that I know what's going on, and I'm kind of invested to see, at least for a few issues more, what's going to happen. And the art is really pretty. The coloring is really good, and the girl is cute. I sent you guys a snapshot of one of the pictures of her feeding, and you can see how there's just enough kind of cheesecakey titillation without it really being, you know, it's not like a campy cheesecake kind of a thing. It's just that it's like this horrific vampire in this beautiful suit skirt, you know, with a nice cleavage kind of thing.
But her face is all vampired out, though.
Yeah, exactly. It's a horror book, no question.
I have it saved in my wank bank.
But she's just cute enough to make you think that the guy's going to try to hang in there and to keep you turning the pages. So it's worth checking out, Graveyard Shift.
Yeah, Faber, he writes page turners. Like, when he's going, you just keep flipping, you know, you really just want to know what happens next.
He has another new title coming out this month, I believe, that looks awesome, about a team of heroes. I forget what it's called, but
Secret
it's
Secret Identity or something?
Yeah,
yeah, they all have secrets.
It looks cool.
Yeah, yeah, I'm pretty excited about that. Well, my last one is Kevin and I were on the Twitter machines, chit-chatting away, as we were wont to do, for those of you, LA_Rabbit1 and WWXKev were our handles, and Phil is me and my sloth, but he's never on, and Super Steve is on, although I think your handle should be Super Steve, to be honest.
I'm not so bold. It's at Steve Raker.
You're like Mr. Like, Fantastic.
Half the time, I have to stop myself from typing super into the thing.
Yeah, you should make a new handle.
Wait, that's not
super. Do two Twitters.
But we were chit-chatting with the creator of the Power Principle comic, and I could have swore we talked about it, but I went through our show notes, and I couldn't find the episode. So I'm going to keep this super quick, but I wanted to tell people, while I backed the Kickstarter, and I believe Steve did too, you can get this entire thing online. Alan, the one-man outfit to put this together, I mean, he has some guest artists that do covers, like J.K. Woodward and a few other more famous names. He's putting these up like a page a day, and he started at the end of last year. So you have a couple issues already, and that's at thepowerprinciple.co. So the power principle like a belief, not like a guy that runs a high school, .co. And you can start with the first page, and like I said, there's about an issue and a half up there already. And it's free, people. So, you know, you can try it out. I like it, but even if it's not to your taste, at least you can say, well, you know, it didn't cost me nothing. And that's an example of someone using a few, you know, thought balloons and some different older storytelling techniques. Again, the thing about sort of playing with time within the panels and all the things that I like more. So check it out. And yeah,
and I'm in it wearing a beret.
What?
I'm also in it as well.
But, me and Chris Campbell are part of a crack security squad that gets cracked up.
Yeah, and mine is not reflective of myself in any way, but I mean, visually it is, but it's not me actually, you know, how I act or behave or anything. But yeah, it's good fun. Check it out.
Power Principle. And Alan's old work, reworking it and recoloring it and all that stuff, and you can buy physical copies from him on that website, too, if you like what you see.
Yeah, and the reworking is kind of interesting. I have the issues in the trade, so I've seen some of the changes, and it's pretty sharp. I know part of it is, for you budding creators out there, Comixology Submit Program allows for people to get their books up on Comixology. But at a panel I went to, the number one issue people have are technical issues, usually due to, like, the file compression and the lettering and everything. So keep trying out there, people. One of the books I know I've talked about before, I believe Pax of the Low Country just got on there and a few others. So it's a cool technique, but you got to jump through the technical boops and beeps that computer people do.
All right, gang, that's another episode of Indie Comic Book Noise.
No!
Yes.
That's it?
Yep. Got one more?
Nope.
All right. Then that's it. Listen to us over on Marvel Noise, where we do the Marvel thing. And I was just recently on the Great Expectations podcast and on Sunday Comics talking about Fantastic Four. And go to powerprinciple.co and help Alan out by checking out his work and letting him know you love it.
Or any feedback.
You know? No, stick to the I love it. All right, gang. Tolerate your beeps and bloops and digital comics and go read some indie comics. Later. Marvel, with your back to the garden, spit you out on the